This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front-runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10. For you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh.
Applebee's.
If I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, the love of my life, Nathan, going to be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy.
Oh,
okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question, Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were going to order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
So okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast. We listen to Sarah Mason, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
My butthole's tingling all the time!
Do you think you can make God laugh?
No, bitch.
There's a reason erasers don't work in the park.
Popping pussy every day.
I'm a Christian wife.
Sicario.
I'm a Christian wife.
White women are notoriously shifty.
I'm a Christian wife.
You should be upset that I had a laugh with her!
Clean up on aisle butt.
Can't look you guys in the eyes right now.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have good Christian fun. Now, that was, of course, Caroline very graciously pointed out in our last episode, you know, hey, Kevin, hey, you know, maybe we could do a few more new drops in the theme song. Maybe it's time. So I wanted to oblige her and create a new soundscape to kick off the show.
You know, I got what I asked for in a way. But it was really powerful of you to subvert that, you know, and just say like, I can't be controlled, you know, like I can't be told.
I think the new theme song sounds terrific, personally.
Oh, yeah, no. That wasn't the question.
I found out that, you know, I Want to Know You by Sonic Flood and Mr. Mistopheles are in the same key. So it's a perfect mashup.
I'm a Christian wife.
I'm a Christian wife. I'm a Christian wife.
It's so brutal.
Good Christian fun is, you know, it's the palace of the thinkers, dreamers, in-betweeners, the broken record players hearing something in the music. And it's also the place where we talk about Christian pop culture, the music, the movies, and the entertainment made for and made by Christians, evangelical Christians, the one true spiritual people in this world. But we're not here to make fun of you or to make you go to church. Don't go to church. We'll make fun of you if you do go to church right now, because you shouldn't. We're just here to have fun, right?
We're here to have fun. And sure.
Well, you know what? You know what we're here to have? We're here to have a laugh.
Oh, you should be upset that I had a laugh. With this podcast.
Yeah, I shouldn't be sad that you slept with her. I should be sad that you had a laugh with her. Yes, that's right. And
how's your heart this week, Kevin?
How's my heart this week?
Yeah.
You know, it's at a steady... Can I tell you what my heart rate is literally right now? It's okay. I'm rocking a 61. Usually my heart rate.
Is that good?
Is that
what? I'm so impressed. That's amazing.
Ooh, thank you. No, my resting heart rate is generally like in the high 40s, low 50s for like resting stuff. But I'm just so jazzed to be here with both of you. So it's at 61. I'm stoked out of my mind.
I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to be talking right now, but what the fuck?
Our guest is incredulous.
Kevin runs like constantly.
I've been just trying to get into that, you know, quarantine bod means a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And this is what it means for me.
Aspirationally is my heart rate. My resting heart rate would be like in the high 40s. So
damn.
I'm mainly jealous.
If I can do it, I promise you, you can do it. It is very attainable, I believe. How's your heart, Caroline?
My heart's good. My resting heart rate is probably like 350 at any given time.
Oh my God.
So, you know, pretty good. I'm trying to take care of myself. That's been good. Started up therapy yesterday. It went great.
Ooh. Oh yeah. We didn't talk about
that.
Yeah. We'll do off mic stuff about
that. We'll talk later. It was great.
I hope it was a nice experience. Yes.
Yeah. And, Hummingbird Watch is still on my balcony. It's kind of the hottest spot in town. I'm not going to lie. There are a lot of birds out there, and they have found the new feeder. So things are looking up here.
Caroline, I think I smell a new co-anchor for some good news. The Bird Report.
It's a channel just for hummingbirds.
You can join that desk alongside our number one CIA boy, John Krasinski. But the topic for today is not John Krasinski. It's Sarah Mason, and it's her music and her work. And to talk about it, we may need to introduce a very special guest. So let's do that right now. Friends and folks, she is a writer. She's an anti-racist educator. You can check out her podcast, White Homework. Give it the hell up for Tori Williams.
Oh my God.
Hello. Is this energy too aggressive?
I love that.
Anytime we have someone on the show for the first time, it's just like, yeah, I do feel like I'm screaming at them half the time, and that's just what it's got to be. Especially over Zoom, I feel like I scream at them a little bit more.
I love it.
I love
this
also
energy.
That you apologize for our theme song and for our introduction. Like, sorry, they made us. You know, like, this is just how it is. There's nothing I can do. I don't control the soundboard.
My hands are tied here, to be honest.
Everyone knows that you cannot edit a podcast.
There's no
way.
No,
you can't do it.
Can't
really
We've tried.
The music
I've tried, and I've ended up adding minutes to the podcast. So we didn't even record. it's a nightmare.
So it doesn't work out. But thank you for being here,
Tori. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
What a fun,
I'm so
nice
excited.
Time. I know. Well, let's talk about it. You know, it was a Twitter meet cute. I slid into your DMs. I followed you for a little bit. I like what you're doing, and we wanted to talk to you on the show about specifically, and also it was a listener recommendation. We were like, we're looking to book like new kinds of guests, and multiple people said, hit up Tori. She probably won't make fun of you too much for whatever you say.
No, I don't. I mean, I'm not above cracking a joke at your expense, but you know, it'll be in good fun. I'm not malicious.
That's all I want.
You can be malicious.
See,
Kevin,
Caroline
actually might prefer that.
Hey, shut up. No, not with new people. That's strange. They have to be trusted people.
Yeah, don't worry. Kevin's a cool, normal guy. No worries.
I don't trust normal people.
That's what I said to Hulu.
Same. Right.
Tori, what is your background and history with face stuff? How'd you grow up?
Oh my God. I grew up like the standard issue evangelicals were not fundamentalist enough for my upbringing. Yeah. So I was like, originally when I was little, we attended like these like Pentecostal house churches almost. Like they were very, very small congregations. Like I was homeschooled K-12. Wow. And it was very strange because I was very directionless, right? Because I like, we were always the only like black kids in church. So we all went to like these extremely white churches, and it was a really, really weird time. Like there was so So my mom is really into like all of these like semi-political or like blatantly political organizations, right? So like Eagle Forum and Family Research Council and all of these different like Christian like policy making or like policy mm-hmm. pushing lobbying kinds of groups. And so
was this geographically in Portland, by the way?
No, well, I was living in Portland. Yeah. I grew up, I was born and raised here. Gotcha. And so my mom was like, she did all this research on like how to keep your kids from falling away from the Lord once they go to college.
Oh, yeah.
And so what she found in her research was that I have this personality type, like I'm an Enneagram 8, right? So I don't give a fuck what the rest of you are doing or if you all are like delusional. Like if I see something that appears a certain way to me, like I don't care how many other people are saying it's not like this. Hello, like anti-racist educator here. I'm like, no, it's like this. I have data. Don't fucking care. Come at me all you want. And so my mom, knowing that this was my personality, was like, okay, well, my brother is very kind of easily swayed. Like he might be like a 6-wing-7-ish, like something like that. Okay. I know you're not supposed to type other people, but just for like an idea of like what personality wise, sure. like what he's like. And so my mom was like, well, your brother needs to have friends who will like keep him on the straight and narrow because he just kind of goes along with what other people are doing. So growing up, I had like two friends and we lived in like the middle of nowhere, like outside of Portland. Sarah Mason was basically my like only friend because we lived in the country. I couldn't go anywhere because I couldn't drive. I never left the house because I was homeschooled. And so I found a lot of solace in her work.
Uh-huh.
And it was lots of really, really good memories.
Did you end up expanding your social circle at all when you did go to college and I assume fall away completely from the Lord?
I didn't fall away from the Lord until I turned 30. So... Oh.
Well,
you know,
It almost worked.
Yeah,
got you through college.
Now the thing is, with that book series, it does. It only goes up to a certain age, so it's like how to keep them from falling away in college, how to keep them from falling away post college. It doesn't go up to 30s and 40s though.
No, it doesn't.
And beyond, and so there's like and mothers across the country are at sea with
an
that
emerging
stuff.
Field.
Yeah. So what was faith like in college then? How did you experience it?
I mean, I absolutely felt like in college that I would be like, didn't really matter like how my politics changed or, you know, like how my perspective changed. I very much felt like I was always going to be a believer. Like I was always going to believe in Jesus. And that was kind of like my baseline. Like that was sort of where I fell. And so I was like, I know that I'm always, this is my team. I'm always going to be on this team. So college was like, I went to Bible college. That was like the first time I'd been away from home. And it was a really wild. I mean, for most people, like college is like the first time leaving. But like, yeah, for me, it was like I'd never gone to school before.
Yeah, that's a huge transition.
You drive by then? Were you driving when you were in college?
Yeah, I was. I like didn't have a car when I was in college. It was fine because like Kirkland's a really small town, so you can walk everywhere. Like you can walk to the grocery store and Starbucks and like all the restaurants. Mm-hmm. So I was very in for a really long time. You know, I had like a little bit of a falling away like after that, like when I was like 24, 25. But even then, like I was living with my boyfriend, right? So I was living in sin, but I was still going, like we still went to church. So it wasn't like that far
makes
removed.
It hotter okay. though when they don't even know.
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. So, okay. So by that point, you got a little more latitude with yourself or how you saw some of like what you would view as like the good Christian life with that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you were maybe living in more of a licensed state. What's the thing that they say? It's like a pendulum swinging between legalism and license. Gosh, even saying the word license, I feel like John Piper. I don't want to do this. John the Diaper Piper.
Tori, I wanted to ask a question, but I'm going to take you backward in your story just a little bit with with being like that kind of personality where you are like a big questioner, if you do believe in something, you're like adamant about it. I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. That's already just a hard position to be like as a woman in general. But I imagine like in the church that you were in where maybe was like a little more fundamentalist, that was probably an even harder role. And I'm curious if like if you found a place in that church as like maybe the evangelist of your community or like the questioner or how did you like find your spot in that community?
Yeah, I mean, I was very much like not so much junior high because I started going to a new church in junior high. But like by the time I got to high school, I was very much like the gung-ho sort of rah-rah-rah high school Christian. And
fully entrenched in youth group, leading stuff maybe. One of the first to go in popcorn prayer.
Like, exactly. And so, I was like on the leadership team in youth group and whatever. It was really strange because, right, like the power dynamic is real weird, right? As like the only black kid in like the high school youth group is me. Mm-hmm. And we kind of had this, you know, we had this like leadership group and, you know, we would go and do like missions trips and whatever. I guess we like left the country once. Like we went to Tijuana like once or twice. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I was the person who was trying to like keep the like camp high going all year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was totally who I was. And I mean, I wasn't like popular or anything in youth group. Like I wasn't one of the popular kids. But I was very into Jesus.
Yes.
Or maybe Jesus was into me.
You know, obsessed. We believe in God, but also God believes in us. And that's a shift I always want to, any sort of like reversal of rhetoric. It's very powerful.
That's helpful. I'm always interested in like people that become, you know, like more outspoken against the church were usually like people also that were like very pro church, you know, mm-hmm. when they were like mm-hmm. within that community.
Yeah,
and I always
totally.
Think it's interesting that like the attributes that were like most good at the time when you were in church ended up being like what kind of gives you like strength to start to disagree and to like create your own belief system, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like just as an example, like I basically told our youth pastor that he had to let me preach.
At what age did you say this to him?
So impressive.
It was like, that's a really good question. I might have been like 19 at this point.
Oh yeah,
maybe.
That's fair. Oh yeah. Post high school.
Basically, that's like the age of some youth group leaders, I'm sure.
Oh, that's also true. That's also true.
Yeah,
it's the age of their wives for sure. Unfortunately.
Oh my God.
Wait till she graduates.
Are we going to talk about like child marriage in the church? What?
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, we're devoting a whole multi-part series to that in October. I mean, there was some sketchy. Gosh. I mean, growing up in Texas, I knew so, not personally, but knew of so
right,
many
knew of.
Youth leaders who would, lead a young woman who was in high school and then maybe a year or two after.
So a girl?
Yes.
So a girl?
Yes.
A girl. So a girl.
That's called, we call that grooming.
A child, yes.
A child?
Unfortunately.
Yes. We call that grooming a child to be your wife. It's not cool.
No, it's not. It's never cool.
What is consent? Not a thing that they teach in evangelical churches. That's for damn sure.
Now, if you had to like quantum leap style inhabit Joshua Harris's body and go back to the 90s, instead of true love waits, what would you have the slogan be?
Wait a second. But he didn't do true love waits.
Oh, that he did. Like I kissed Sadie goodbye. Wait, who did true love waits then?
That was like a focus on the family, maybe?
I don't know.
True love waits. I feel like it was, Focus pushed it really hard.
They did. Yeah. It was also Radiohead. You know, there's a Radiohead song called True Love Waits that I'm sure confused a whole generation of evangelical children. There is. It's not about abstinence. Tommy York is not
pro-abstinence. I'm like trying to find it.
This is amazing. What album is, which album is it on?
The True Love Waits song? I believe it's on one of the ones from the 90s.
Jesus, I was also.
Oh no! It's actually on Moon. It's on Moonshaped Pool. It was from their 2016 album, so one of their more recent ones.
Oh, okay. So more recent.
But if we're redoing "True Love Waits" as a slogan, what would have been way more helpful to imbue young people at that time as a sexual ethic. And it can only be three words. That's my
Hold on. Let me I need a couple seconds to think about
take
this.
Them.
So how would we empower?
It's gotta fit on rings. It's gotta fit on t-shirts. It's gotta fit on bracelets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is no means no.
No means no.
Because they don't teach cool that in church.
Well, just like, for girls.
You need to submit to your husband, right? Mm-hmm. So if he wants to have sex and you don't want to, you have to do it.
Or you should be the one that knows how to say no to men.
Oh, that's also true, right? They also put all of the responsibility on like girls for
little girls
for
assault.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just I meant like boys' sexuality, right? Like anyone who's socialized male, it's like the girls are responsible for their sexuality, for like keeping their sexuality.
Caroline, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I think you struck upon a really interesting point when you're talking about, yeah, the responsibility that's imbued to women specifically to foster sexual ethic in men, or to like kind of steward it in a twisted way, does come from such a place of embarrassment where they do need a mommy. In a lot of ways, where it's like, oh, I don't know, like this thing is and it is like a kind of vacuum of their own like independent like
agency.
Ethic. Yes, agency. Yes.
Well, I would add another wrinkle to that of like for men that are raised in like, you know, masculinity means like silent strength and physical strength and moral strength and spiritual strength, like all this kinds of strength, like having attraction to women feels like weakness maybe. And so if they, instead of like accepting the blame or whatever for like their sexual feelings or arousal, it's women aroused me and shook me out of my strong position. Mm-hmm. And so I'm embarrassed by that. And I can't let that be seen that I actually have a weakness. And so I'll just paint it as like women forfeiting their responsibility and like making me seem weak kind of thing.
Yeah. Caroline ended that very eloquent point with a shrug shoulders emoji over the Zoom call.
How did your parents get so into their house churches and the kind of think tank groups that they loved?
So that was primarily my mom. So my parents met in Norway. They're both going to an English-speaking church there. My dad was in the army, and so they were part of this Bible study, like this young, like this youth, like, or young people's Bible study at this church that was super into the rapture and like kind of like this sort of hyper vigilance about like Jesus is going to come back at any moment. Like we have to be ready. Mm-hmm. And at one point I asked my parents, because I was like, you got married like 6 years after you met. Like, I don't believe for a second that you didn't have sex. And she's like, we thought Jesus was coming back, so we weren't going to be caught dead having sex.
Like, that's me. Uh-huh. He's like, I got to wait until they start to do it. Bam!
Whereas, yeah, my thought process is I want him to see it. Look at what the Lord hath wrought.
You're timing
oh
it.
Oh my gosh. Oh
pretty
my
arrival.
Gosh. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I appreciate being in the company of my fellow exhibitionists, Kevin.
Hey. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, that's definitely how I describe myself on all my profiles, too.
I mean, I don't describe myself. Well, no, I do on Twitter. I'm like, yeah, this is just how I am. Deal with it.
Podcast, creamfluencer, exhibitionist.
It's a thing, right? It's like there's all these things that you like didn't. They say that like being gay is a sin or whatever. Like I was fucking born an exhibitionist. Like I never had clothes on as a kid.
That's she knew.
I knew.
She always knew.
It's not taught.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Running around screaming, Winnie the Pooh bearing it up.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. My mom was like, no, you never had clothes on. It's like, yeah, that checks out. So yeah, God, this is like, I'm thinking so much about like what I was taught. Cause yeah, I was definitely taught, it was like, oh, you have to wait to have sex. And it was like, you're not really given any information on like what sex is specifically. I wasn't good at that. I wasn't good at waiting. So, you know, I know it was kind of like a situation where I know I'm supposed to feel guilty, but I don't. Because it's like, I don't know, it feels good. Like, it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, my boyfriend was like, he definitely felt kind of torn up about it. So
that's a common narrative as well, too, I've found. Is that really? The men in particular are like, what have we done? And then, like, oftentimes the women are like, there. This sucks. Yeah, I have to comfort you in this moment. Yeah.
Totally.
But it's, oh my gosh. It's way more angsty on a male side of that.
That's
spectrum.
So weird. That is so strange to me. I don't know. But like, I mean, it was weird too, because it was like the same summer that I figured out that I was like sexually attracted to women also. So it was just like a very...
lot of
fraught time, right? Yeah, it was a lot of information.
It was a like, hat okay. on a hat. Yeah.
It's like, okay, you go from like not really knowing like how sex works like at all. Like, you know the mechanics and that's it. And like going from that to like all the way to the other side of like,
oh, sure, yeah.
Oh, sex doesn't suck. Like, it's not like, it's not a bad thing, you know? It's just like, it just is. Like, it's a thing. It happens. People do it. Like, turns out most people are wired for it. Not everybody, and that's okay, but
yeah,
you know.
Well, I can't relate. I saw Top Gun, so I knew exactly what sex was like.
See, I wasn't allowed to like watch any movies like that.
Is that what it was, Caroline? Truly is Goose and Maverick playing volleyball?
Oh no, it was like, it was a lot more than that.
Was it the Great Mouse Detective? Like, what unlocked it for you?
Yeah, that was part of it. Okay. A lot of like the, you know, I Love the 70s TV show. I got to learn things about that.
Oh.
I watched a lot of VH1 for a while.
Oh, you're saying, oh, how you learned about sex, not what you were first sexually attracted to.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
when you say I Love the 70s, I'm like, did Andy Dick do it for you?
Michael
like,
Ian Black.
Every young girl has a Michael Ian Black story.
We all come around.
Gracious.
But yeah, it is funny how like media was the thing that can like be the gate that unlocks like agnosticism or just bringing out of beliefs or whatever.
Oh yeah. No, and
so it makes so sense.
And an educator in that sense as yeah. well too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I learned about J&O from a VH1 music video countdown where they played I Touch Myself by the Divinyls. As a young child, I'm like, is that what that is? Truly. Like it's very odd. So yeah. Tori, if you could walk us up to like age 30 and sort of like the moment of full falling away from the faith, or however you would define it and describe it. What were the events leading up to that, and what was that?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I all of a sudden had to like wrestle with, after I figured out that I was like sexually attracted to women, I also had to like wrestle with all of the like anti-gay theology that I was taught. And so that was really hard. So I spent a lot of time in prayer about that over like the next 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And also I know gay people and they're way nicer than the people I go to church with. So like what gives?
The fruit is there.
Yeah, it was just...
I mean, fruit of the spirit.
Caroline. Yeah. I was like, word choices. Yes, but yes, that's such a common greatest hits of like just the cognitive dissonance of mm-hmm. positive experience with queer people. It's just like, well, okay, I guess this is stupid as shit to think anything differently. It's like an unimpeachable anecdotal experience, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, but like what the straw that like broke the camel's back for me in terms of religion was like the white evangelical response to Michael Brown being murdered and the way that like all of these adults, like white men who had taught me my entire fucking life, like we love our neighbors and we serve those with less and like we're supposed to take care of one another. And this is like the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're fucking cheering for a black kid being murdered by cops for maybe stealing a pack of cigarettes. And they were like, I was like, oh, okay. So everything that you taught me my entire life was a fucking lie. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And also you hate me, so I'm out. It's like those two things together is like, not, we're not getting over this hill, are we? It's like, nope, gotta let this go. So there was some, I didn't have any of the like sunk cost. Like, I should really stay in it and try to make it work. I was like, y'all are bullshit. Like, I hate you. Goodbye.
You. You're like, oh, and there's the evidence and I'm good.
Yeah.
That's so liberating to be free of, the sunk cost fallacy stuff where it's like, but my life is like, and just be like, I'm good. Oh, but I don't know. It's been 30 years or whatever. Like to just be like, okay, I'm good. This is, and to be at peace with it.
I mean, and I think that like, that's such a good point, right? Like we're in the middle of this pandemic and it's like, we were taught to love our neighbors. It's like, none of you do that. None of you believe that. Like, why are you saying this? Like, you have to be in it for like the money or you just want attention or like you don't believe it. You don't live it. So like, why are you up here spewing it every day? Like, and trying to control other people. So it's just like, it's gotta be like a power trip or like, if you're in a big church, it's gotta be about like the job or like the position or the prestige, or you just like people having to listen to you for 90 minutes every week or whatever. Like, you don't love your neighbors. Get out.
Yeah, like you like semantics and like that kind of stuff, being academic about it.
There's never been a more literal manifestation of love for your neighbor than right now. Like it is the most visible, tangible, it's not symbolic, it is physical science, how to love your neighbor now. And there's so many people that refuse to. And it's weird that you can see people refuse to as well. Like it's one thing where it's like, oh, this person gives me strange vibes, or this person maybe feels selfish. Now it's like I can see someone across the street and be like, I don't know if you love me. Like that's such a bizarre thing. Even just like in mass stuff, that's what I'm referring to. But that feels real in a way where it's like, okay, like were we just kidding or not? And it turns out some people were just kidding about a lot of this stuff, and that's been very sad to see and reconcile. And there's been some surprises in a good way during this pandemic, and there's been a lot of surprises in a bad way, I think, with that, including like personal like losses, almost not like in terms of death or illness, but just in the sense of, I don't think I can be friends with this person anymore. I don't think I can have like a close intimate relationship with this person anymore because of what is so like tangibly clear.
Yeah. And it was the same thing for me with Michael Brown and Ferguson. You know, some people preach this, but they don't actually believe it. They don't live it, and they're never going to, right? They are, if you're taking joy in the execution of a black child by the state, like you're never going to live this. So it was pretty easy to be like, okay, we're done here.
When you say they were cheering, do you mean like they were literally cheering for it?
Well, like it was Christian. It was Christianese cheering, right? So it was like, well, the wages of sin is death. It's like,
what?
Okay, I don't believe in hell, but you're going there.
That is fucking nuts.
It's like, this is what happens when you sin against the authorities.
This is like,
where do you think America came from, fool?
Yeah, like there's just so much, I don't know, like suddenly that kind of law is like punishable by death at any given moment.
Exactly.
I think so much of it too, like, and this is a theory, I don't know if it's like totally on the right base too, but I just feel like weirdly a lot of Christians don't value life, like literal life very much.
Yeah. People who have been born. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Like the abortion movement aside, only like it is really like death can be like a justifiable consequence for like a whole range of like sin or rule breaking, and it's also, or it could be like a sign of valor or like martyrdom or like this amazing deed you did, and because the afterlife is so like important and like overemphasize that, like, that's a truly insane statement to say that like Michael Brown deserved to die because that's the wages of sin, like a stealing offense, you know? And so that like on top of all the racism, I think just like the total lack of valuing life here literally on earth right now is just like such a big part of of, yeah, the disregard for the Black Lives Matter movement and just cops killing people. The big one, the big like key that helps you see that too is when you bring up like, you know, cops disproportionately kill people of color, and then someone will say like, well, they kill white people, like more white people. And it's like, but they're still, cops shouldn't be killing a lot of people, period. You know, like ever.
And that's better. So, like, it's better, yeah, that they kill lots of white people. Like,
it's not the killing, you know, like killing is fine, but it should be equal. You know, like, that's right. That's like the solution.
Equality. We want equality in police execution.
Or at least like symbolic equality about it. Yeah. So it's just, that's the thing that I get hung up all the time too. It's just like the total disregard for life at all.
Yeah. There's a real, what's the word? Not levity to it, but just kind of a almost a flippancy to it in terms of like, okay, protect the fetus, protect the fetus, protect the fetus. It's here. All right, you're on your own. You know, it's just like, fuck off. Like, good luck, buddy. Like, I'm not going to give you anything. Pull yourself up by your own little baby bootstraps if you're if you're in a low income area. Like, it doesn't matter at all. That's one. Yeah, that's another thing where it's like, once you see it, it feels hard to unsee on in any significant way. Like, pro death penalty. So obviously, like, you know, I know we've talked about all this stuff before, but it just remains mind blowing.
Devastating. With that.
And even like, I would even go as far, and this is more of a nuanced thing, but like, we've talked about it before, Caroline, but just like friends of mine reposting or posting Black Lives Matter stuff that go to non-affirming churches, or reposting Black leaders who are non-affirming in conservative Christian circles of the queer community. It's like, well, no, they don't fit. If it's like, well, if it's not trans lives, trans Black Lives Matter, queer Black Lives Matter, then it's like, no, you're JK. You're like,
you want like presentable lives.
Your male deacon's life mattered, who you hired to read scripture before the white guy preached for an hour. Like, it's,
oh my gosh.
That's
what it feels like. No, that's such a good point that it's like, right. There's like this respectability politics part of it for like, especially like white evangelicals like, well, you know, yes, like obviously Black Lives Matter, but, and then it's like, they're just throw something out. It's like, well, you know, but I can't be affirming because the Bible clearly says that. It's like, well, no, the Bible doesn't clearly say, but that's another story. Or like, what's the other, it's like, well, yeah, Black Lives Matter, but also like crime.
Yeah. But if they committed a crime, then it's like, it's anyone's game, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
The crime stuff is unreal. It does make me feel like if a sentient gun with googly eyes glued on it ran for president, he would win. You know what I mean? Like that's what it comes down to, like this kind of lust for law and order, how people get so horny for crime and punishment and all. And even even us, even people who are like, want to think of ourselves as progressive and stuff, where it's like, yeah, but my favorite show is still SVU, or my favorite show is still Brooklyn Nine-Nine, or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. It's an interesting contradiction to live in, but
yeah.
But we really appreciate you sharing your story, Tori. Thank you
so
much.
Yeah, yes. Of course.
Let's take a break, and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now. And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh, yeah.
The new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that
right.
can kind of propel me into
feel
like
as incredible as you could feel.
To exercise more, mm-hmm. to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that, and then
good
going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/GoodChristianFun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
I agree.
The
first month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Jesus left us all on red.
Jesus left amazing. Us all on red. Welcome to Good Christian Fun.
He just wanted to get his rocks off, and then he was like, peace, I'm out.
The tomb Thanks. Is empty, and so are now.
Oh my God.
Should I come back on that?
Oh my
God. Okay. Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive back into the topic.
We're going to get some reviews.
What'd you say, Caroline?
We're going to get some reviews.
Some reviews. Wait, is everyone still recording? I was like a mid check-in. We're still good on records. Toya, I want to hear about your exposure to Christian pop culture growing up. You said it was maybe a little bit more isolated socially, so maybe you sought a little more refuge in the only culture that you were maybe allowed to participate in and experience in a meaningful way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my mom was very adamant that I like didn't read books by non-Christian authors. I didn't like read magazines that weren't explicitly Christian. Obviously I wasn't allowed to listen to non-Christian music. And now that I'm thinking about it, I don't remember the first, I guess it's probably Hanson was the first like non-Christian CD that I ever bought, but they were evangelicals.
Yes.
No, they were even, they were like, they were
Christian. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they were. Okay. So before they like released their album, like when they were a little bit younger, they were actually in a Carmen music video.
Yes. 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 We talked about this, Caroline, last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I mean, I knew that.
Yeah, and we talked about the fun fact where me and my siblings all share their birthdays, and we're all from Tulsa, Oklahoma as well. Yeah.
Whoa, I forgot about
that.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
I only remember Isaac's birthday and I don't remember Isaac's birthday. I only remember Taylor's birthday. I don't remember Zach's birthday either.
March 14th, November 17th, and one of them is October 20th, and I'm the 11th. But still, it's so close.
Wait, do you line up in birth order too? Like the youngest Hanson has the same birthday
I don't know.
As you?
I have no idea.
Their sister Jessica and my sister Elizabeth have the same birthday.
Oh. A buddy of mine plays bass for them when they tour, which they're not doing this year, but he says they're so wonderful and they're so
but they're nice.
They're so great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet boys.
Okay, so Hanson was your if you wanted to be bad, you listened to some Hanson.
Hanson was your guilty.
I had to ask my mom. I had to petition my mom to be able to like buy their album, their first album. But after she realized that they were like homeschooled and like went to church, then she was on board and that was fine. So yeah, that was that. The first Christian CD that I bought myself was Point of Grace.
Oh yeah, you kept that candle burning, Tori.
Yeah. Yep.
All
absolutely.
Takes is one steady heart. Uh huh.
Uh huh.
I can still sing so many of their songs. Like, I can't sing. Like, I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I still know all of their songs by heart.
I mean, that's gonna serve you well. Those right. Are, they're let me upbeat. Tell you now. Tell you now. When you're walking in the dead of night, when your soul is churning. Seems out of sight. Keep the candle burning. All it takes is one steady heart in a world that's turning. Shine a light and pierce the dark. Keep the candle burning. Keep the candle burning. Young Tori, headbanging.
I will keep that candle burning until I'm 30. I'm going to snuff it out.
Aww.
I know. Well, do you, like, when you think of yourself as a young Christian, and even saying, like, aw, thinking back on it, like I think sometimes we feel embarrassed or we feel foolish about who we were or like how we were raised with some of this stuff. Do you have compassion for your younger self when you think about her?
Oh, I have a ton of compassion for my younger self. Like I wasn't given any agency because you weren't supposed to, your kids weren't supposed to have agency, right? Yeah. Hannah Schaaf on Twitter, she always likes to say evangelicals love enmeshment. It's like, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Like, they don't believe that children should differentiate from their parents, which is just like a normal biological process that all species experience. Evangelicals think that that's like unbiblical.
Yeah. And if you have any agency, Dr. Dobson recommends that your parents spank it out of you and it'll come out.
Yeah,
you
have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have to, like, they have to break your will, but not your spirit, which. Mm,
so true.
Christ. Where's the line there? Exactly?
Did you go to any CCM concerts? Any?
Oh yeah, like I went to Creation Fest every single year. Let's see. Like, yeah, I went to a bunch of other concerts. I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously like DC Talk, and then like when they all split and like did their own separate things, I like went to all their own, like, you know, Kevin Max, like I saw him at like this basement show in Bremerton, Washington.
What?
I know. It was, first of all, I was 18 and my mom let me drive from Portland to like outside of Seattle, which is like 4 hours as an 18 year old
to see Kevin Max.
Yes. To go.
You had to
concert.
Take it to the Max, man.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I've seen him live several times actually, and like he's,
I bet he's actually really fun. I bet he's a great show.
I also went to Vegas with him one time. So
you what?
Did what?
I went to Vegas with him one time. Well, we what met up mean? When he was living in Vegas. And yeah, he's a lot of fun. He can party way harder than I can.
Like, wait a second. You and Kevin Max made an appointment to go hang out in Vegas.
Well, okay, so our church was
to see Britney. What was the setup?
Out.
Yeah.
No, we just went to a bunch of clubs. Like, okay, so if you want the story.
Yes.
So our church
was
really, really into music, right? And so a lot of our musicians at church would play on like CCM albums in Nashville. And so one of like our bassist, he like knew all of those guys and like played with them and stuff. And so actually it was like his girlfriend, he and his girlfriend were like going to go and like meet up with him. And then like, he couldn't go. And so she like called me up and she's like, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to Nashville. I'm going to Vegas to hang out with Kevin Max. You want to come with me? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was a really fun time. And like I said, like I will never be able to party as hard as like K-Max. It's just, it's not going to happen.
Sorry. What will people think also, when they hear that I'm a gambling freak?
A gambling. Well, we didn't gamble though. We just like went, we just went to the clubs. I'm going to send you guys while we're talking. I'm going to send you guys some pictures.
I can't believe this.
Yeah.
You went clubbing with Kevin Max.
Clubbing with Kevin. Well, while you're doing that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Sarah Mason and how she fit into your life. At this time, how she came into it. You said we're going back and forth about some stuff that might be personally meaningful to you. And one of the people you said was Sarah Mason, who is a singer-songwriter. We're talking about her debut album from 1996. Kind of a Lilith Fair vibe, a little Natalie Merchant, Sarah McLachlan vibes. She herself said she styled herself in the vein of a Leslie / Sam Phillips, who's an artist we've covered on the show before. A meta modern folk. So, and she does have a sound that I do find to be very safe and comforting to me. Watching the music video for All Fall Down felt like Chewy, I'm home. And it did feel like, okay, I feel like I'm in the backseat of my mom's car and things are going to be fine, even if it is totally a global pandemic. So, Tori, for you, how did Sarah's music come into your life?
So I had, I think what happened was I had requested, I would request that the library would buy, albums by Christian artists because, you know, we would go to the library every week pretty much. And, you know, my mom was like on this mission to like evangelize the library, I guess. And so, I would put in like requests. And so whenever I'd put in requests for a certain artist, or we had a youth team for the library. And so sometimes we would go to a music store and purchase CDs for the library to be able to then they would register them and then you'd be able to like check them out. I know. Cool. It's so quaint. And so this is like, I just,
that's smart,
you know,
of the library's part to like get you all involved in that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love a library gang.
We got her album in. This wasn't 1996. This was probably 1997.
Well, the dates are very important. We have a fact checker through every episode to make sure everything's on the up and up.
Yeah.
It's me. We have a fact checker.
I checked out her album. I probably saw one of her music videos first. Okay. And then I went to the library and like checked out her album and just like absolutely fell in love with it. Because it was a little bit like, I mean, this was kind of around the same time that like, you know, yeah, Paula Cole and like Natalie Merchant.
Totally Paula Cole,
And like Sarah McLachlan, like it just like spoke to me so much, and I just loved the style, and so yeah.
I want
to
read
about her music, like spoke to you necessarily, or what was it that was like the charm for you?
I mean, I think that, let's see here, I think that the biggest thing for me was that she felt like so much of an outsider, and I resonated with that so much, right? Like she felt like someone who very much did not have a community. And like, this is just me projecting my stuff onto her. I'm not saying she doesn't have a community. Like, it sounds like she has a lot of cool friends. I don't know. But yeah, so she just, the way that she wrote and like her lyrics, it very much, I felt very seen by her, right? And she has a little bit of this sort of esoteric, poetic vibe to her. And even more so in her second album than in the first, but her kind of lack of belongingness was so beautiful to me.
Yeah, it resonated with you. I want to read an excerpt from the literally the Encyclopedia of Contemporary Christian Music. That is a little entry on her that speaks to what you're talking about. This is from, we love checking in with Mark Allen Powell, no relation to Mac Powell,
but
he wrote this volume that is our Bible for the most part for this podcast. He says, for the most part, she has been on the edge of contemporary Christian music, producing material that is unpredictable musically and sometimes lyrically poetic in ways that come across as vague or confusing. She accepts her borderline status with good humor, enduring the superficialities of the contemporary Christian music subculture with a wry smile. She once signed one of her posters at a Christian bookstore with the inscription, "We've got to move this crap off the shelves." She later said, "I got in trouble for that." Mason has sometimes performed with a band, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, she was a student in college when she recorded this album. She was a young person when she recorded this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I wasn't familiar with it before. And in like looking up her lyrics and listening it too, it was like, she's one of the outliers as far as like CCM artists that we've covered who are usually... Yeah. borderline like patronizing with their lyrics, you know, just like the truth that they're trying to tell you, they're going to repeat it directly and specifically over and over. It doesn't express very much doubt or very much like complication or gray area or all those other things that you know, most music does. So you brought this artist up, I was like, oh, this is like really special, and her lyrics to me are still confusing, but like they probably get richer on the re-listen, and they aren't like, I wouldn't even say they're really obviously like pro God songs. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know that coming in too, it's only from like little allusions to Bible phrases that I you could even notice,
which is how
it.
We so, like it. I want to be confused as to whether I'm listening to a Christian.
Frankly,
or not.
Yes, So I feel she reminded me a lot of like another artist we covered called Sarah Groves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Also, it's very reminiscent.
Like, stylistically the same, yes, but also like very dense lyrics that are. You know, talking about a relationship with God, but it isn't a simplistic sort of relationship, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even lyrically, it was kind of like some of the Leslie Phillips stuff we talked about too. Now, this is just for us, but I do need to share the screen and show this picture.
Tori!
Maybe we'll post this to our social media with permission of a young Tori.
You all look like gorgeous. I know. Just like so happy, but like his little smile and the soul patch combo.
He knows.
That is potent. Oh my God.
There we go. Let's just get right up in there.
Yeah. Wow, look at his hair.
Wow, goodness gracious. That was a time. We don't do hair like that anymore. And I don't want us to do it like that.
I'm okay with that. I mean, okay, if my kids want that, then like that's fine with me.
And that's their choice, yes.
Right. Like I will support my kids.
Moved on to some other stuff.
My kids' self expression, but like yeah, I was like thought it was so great, and it's like in retrospect, like, nope.
It's really different.
So, Caroline, as someone listening to this for the first time, and I heard All Fall Down, I think, a few times on the radio, but I wasn't a Mason head. I wasn't a Mason jar, as they're known in the fan community. but what did All Fall Down strike you as lyrically, Caroline? Like, what did you take it to mean or to be about?
Blow your trumpets, angels. Come, sweet salvation. Hallelujah. Shout. Thanks to the power that strength and glory. Good Lord, glory.
Lord, glory.
And the fool stands under to fall.
Fall.
But the wise trip on grace. Oh, fall down.
Bop, did it, bop, it, up, do, bop.
Hit the ground.
Now, because upon first listen of this, I was like, oh, like not listening to it too close lyrically in the verses. I was like, oh, this is basically every knee will bow and every tongue confess. Like haters gonna be brought down. And the chorus does more seem to speak to like, no, even you're gonna fall down, you dumbass. Yeah. Like it's like it's not even like believer, non-believer. It's like it is the literally angels prostrate fall sort of thing, and basically like that we all suck, maybe on some level.
That's true. That was like, and that's like something that I struggle with in retrospect with a lot of this music. Like I would like step up to the microphone. If those lyrics weren't so fundy, I would absolutely still be blasting that shit. I really would. But I can't, like, just, yeah, the lack of, the refusal to deal with ambiguity, right? And they're just so, like, I just believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There, it feels like a, yeah, definitely like a victory lap song.
Well,
you know,
and it's premeditated. Like, it's very, I don't know. It's like a cudgel, right? But it's like they have all they, and they have all this like beautiful music on that album that I absolutely love. And yeah, but it's just like the lyrics, every single song, it feels like is just, oh, it's peak evangelicalism, which if you, I guess, like once you get to the God's not dead bullshit, it's like, yeah, that was clearly coming. Like that was clearly in the pipe.
My God, it's not dead.
Why yeah. do you hate God?
I see some of that. Some of this stuff, it does, I feel like it's flirting more with the more didacticism that you would find on other stuff. Like it doesn't fully go all the way, like Fly Baby or even Love, which is like a cover, has nothing to do with like what I would think of as evangelical stuff. Mm-hmm. And especially a song I was puzzled by the central metaphor of, which is Break Hard the Wishbone, which I would love to hear both of y'all's takes on what you think breaking hard the wishbone means.
I have a theory.
In this context. This is like a uncharacteristically sort of like sultry, sexy, sort of Christian sounding song. Like, ooh,
let me know I owe it for last week. I've been punching in and out so much my card is losing its heartbeat. I do not want to step outside the beat when you're conducting time.
Time.
My wish is to dance free in front of you until you laugh at me. Can I do that? Would you like that?
She's talking to me?
And you say,
good. There's another Christian artist that she reminds me of so much, which is Kendall Payne. Did you listen to Kendall Payne, Tori?
I loved Kendall Payne. Yeah.
This song in particular is like, summer sun has come to stay, bikini stands, outrageous leg. Like, it sounds very much like Supermodels, which was a crossover hit that was the theme song to Popular, the Ryan Murphy show on the WWE.
I just want to say Sarah was around way before Kendall, because Kendall's like my age.
Yeah, no, so. Jordan Sisters, yeah, definitely after this. So, yeah. But it did remind me, yeah, they're reflecting off of each other. So, friends, what is Break Hard the Wishbone? I need to know. I need to know the answer to this question. What does it mean, Caroline?
Okay. I think what this song is trying to say is, as a musician or a creative person, she gets stuck in, like, wishing she had more talent or a more creative approach or the right way to do the thing. And then God, through creation and then through talking to her, is telling her to, like, don't just wish that you have this freedom. Just, like, go take it.
Just do it.
Do it. Because, like, that's what I did when I made Oceans. And the wishbone, you don't need it. Like, get rid of it. You don't need to wish for this talent.
Like, you can just figure it out. The full Reddit thread from
is that right?
That tracks.
Don't know. Like, I feel like that could also, it could mean something else, but that's what I was picking up from it.
I think it's valid. Tori, rebuttal.
Okay, so I like, so what the funniest thing about about Caroline's answer was, I was like, when you said oceans, I was like,
the Hillsong song?
Yeah.
God made oceans.
Right? I was like, yeah, what? Wait, what are we talking about again? So because the chorus is like her being sung to, right? Like, this is what she's being told to do. So obviously, like, in the verse, she's talking about how she just has this, like, punch in, punch out life, and she's kind of tired of it and, like, over it, and isn't finding fulfillment in that, which, again, like, is totally fair, and also just so freaking adorable, because she, like you said, she was like 21, so
oh, if that, like, I'm sure she's like 20 or 19 when she's
so
writing.
It's just like, it's so wholesome.
I know, what a wholesome gal.
It's such wholesome content, and so I don't know, for me, I kind of take it to mean, like, it feels very much like manifestation. It's not like, oh, don't just wish for it, like, yeah, like, we're gonna break this,
like,
thing, we're gonna break
it
through, and
yeah,
you,
oh,
like,
I see that, yeah,
you are gonna, like, if this is the thing that you want, like, just, yeah, again, kind of, yeah, like, just go do it, but it's like, you are making this happen,
yeah,
it's
like, don't, yeah, don't get distracted by your own dreams and live in the clouds, like, do tangible practical steps to get,
right,
to where you're going,
make it happen.
But I don't think it's God that's saying that to her, personally.
It's her conscience?
Really?
No. No, I think it's just a guy.
It's Satan? Oh. It's,
but she's saying, like, Satan. Consider
it's
all
either
your
God
works
or Satan. No one else can talk to her.
No, I think that, like, a lot of the lyrics have to be, like, coded as, like, but I don't think her intention was for it to,
oh,
be,
you,
like,
think,
about,
like,
Jesus.
She was like, you can think this is about God. I know it's not about God. Interesting.
That's,
I feel like, also,
like,
the wishbone,
loving her,
you know,
other,
was, like, there's two pathways, and you just, like,
yeah,
break it.
Yeah.
A new one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can I tell you what I think the song's about?
Yeah,
yes.
Kevin. Is it about a little dog?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, why would you want to break him hard? Look
why
how sweet he is.
Why would you break him so hard?
Look at his little paw.
You're not going to break him physically, just mentally.
Look at him holding the bow and arrow. I've made my Zoom background Wishbone from the television show Wishbone, which they're doing a reboot of. They've recasted him, but they are doing a reboot of that.
Should be the theme song.
Also, of course, this song is, it's one of those things, and I don't know if you figured this out later in life, Tori, but it is just like Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. The bass line is like totally lifted,
oh, yeah,
from,
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of those things I don't mind. All music is plagiarized from all other music in the world. What other songs did you guys like on this album?
Tuesday.
Okay, Tuesday.
Ooh. What do you like about, yeah, Tuesday?
I think that because I was in a place where, like, my days kind of blended together, right? Like, not going anywhere or doing anything or seeing anyone. It was just kind of like every day was very similar to the last, you know, with the exception of church, really. Like, that was like the only thing that we did. So I don't know. For me, Tuesday just felt sort of warm and inviting. Finding beauty in, like, the monotony.
Yeah.
Really spoke to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
that's what I like about this album too, and I feel like her whole POV is so, you know, and it's loaded with, like, Christian language, but it is like beauty in mundane things and not taking stuff for granted, and like Tuesday after a reckless and used day, running and running without a chance to stop and chat at the sky like a good Instagram Christian. Look at this sunset.
Yeah. Sunsets.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I feel like there's this song, and then there's a few others that I think about it too, that are like a lot about nature, like bringing you back around to the, like, centering you around God, mm-hmm, or like reminding, mm-hmm, you of the bigger picture and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, I really, I mean, for me, like, yeah, I like that was one thing. Like I would frequently listen to, like, I'd listen to her music and then I would just like go and sit outside. Like we lived on this like 2-acre property, like up on the hill, in this old farmhouse that was built in like 1908 or something. Yeah, so I would just like go, like I listened to her album and then I just like go and sit outside. Like we had a little tree swing. I would just like hang out there. And it was a way to pass the time, but also like to process, right?
Totally.
Because I don't know, I knew I had a weird experience. Like I knew that my childhood was not like anyone's childhood that I had ever met. And I, from a very young age, knew that I probably would never meet another person who was raised the way that I was. So, yeah. I don't know. I definitely resonate.
Well, and from this perspective of the song, it is someone telling you you're not a weirdo for wanting to talk to the sky or feeling like, or like the yearning for a connection of whether you want to call it God or nature or just something outside of yourself when you feel isolated from other people relationship wise. So yeah, I think it goes back to that feeling you were talking about being seen, especially mm-hmm. like for the kind of childhood and upbringing that you had. I think yeah. that's really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, because I didn't listen to this growing up, but, and this might just be freaking millennial stuff, but the the sound of this album made me feel so good. It's that 90s stuff where it's like, it's stamped in time of like,
I know.
It's a little post grunge, but it all seems like it's recorded in this big room and the drums are kind of far away. The guitars are a little more up front, but it's like post Nirvana Cobain stuff. Yeah. And it just feels like expansive yes. and sincere. Mm-hmm. Like we haven't gotten yeah. to like irony pop or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. it just felt really lovely to,
it was so sincere. Right. Yeah. And it was like, it was very much like I want to like fully embrace and like live life,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yes,
and I don't know why, but it's just, it's so precious to me. It seems very quaint in retrospect, but it's also like I still listen to all those albums.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So,
wait, what's the McLaughlin one that you give the most spins to? What do you listen to the most with that?
So actually the first album of hers that I bought was like a concert album. So it was just all of her like hits.
I bought that too. I bought that on iTunes.
On iTunes?
Oh, yeah.
I think this is before iTunes when I bought it.
Oh, okay.
I think so. Yeah. But I wasn't allowed to listen to secular music, but Building a Mystery was played so frequently on the radio that I would like hear it at the grocery store and stuff.
Well, that was with the controversial lyric.
Yeah.
Before yes, Jesus was, came.
Which people were like, that's weird. But also,
she's a witch.
Well, I think that she maybe was okay with people thinking she was a witch.
Oh, yeah. She was definitely, you know, there was something that happened in a lot of pop music that we can describe as witch baiting, which is like her and also Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac is like, oh maybe gosh. I'll never tell. Florence Welch from Florence and the Machine, she's a bit of a witch baiter as well, where it's like this, you can court so that jerky. Audience without totally confirming the identity yourself. One of my favorite so songs funny. From this album was freaking Downtown.
I was going to say Downtown is like the epitome of the 90s sound for me. That was what I wrote down.
I put it in a blanket, wrap it around me, baby. It feels good. And of course, I resonate with like the Springsteenian nature of some of the lyrics, where it's like,
yes.
Sometimes you just need to go for a drive.
Yes. Yes.
Gotta go to the urban center of Kingwood, Texas.
Hey, shut up. I mean, but in the Springsteen song, it would be Bruce be like, sometimes you drive and you never find any answers, but you just need the road. And this one's like, you'll find God's grace downtown. It's right there off the highway.
You drive long enough, yeah, you'll definitely arrive.
I want to get to that chorus. We can listen to it for a second. I run to my car. Cut. Travel down the road that leads me straight into my father's arms. I could drive you downtown to the simplest fate. I could drive. There it is. That feels good. I would put this on a playlist or something. And
I don't know, like, what her downtown was like, but it was so inspiring.
Oh, time out.
Time out. Okay, so when I just realized, because I flipped back to my Google search of Sarah Mason, and it said people also search for David Dark, which obviously it's her husband, and then the next one says John Foreman, and it says John Foreman is Sarah Mason's brother-in-law.
Yeah, they're in-laws.
Yes.
And I thought I knew everything about how all the CCM people were connected. I had no idea that that was true.
Yeah, there's like a 6 degrees of separation with Mr. Foreman with most people in CCM, I would say. I think Sarah Groves is connected to him in some way, wasn't she?
He's the son around which all of them orbit.
Yay! Yeah, Nickel Creek, all those, Sarah Watkins.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder how that changed her music or affected it at all. Or affected his music, because she came first.
Hmm. Maybe she dared him to move, right? And then he did.
I wanted to talk about Come In.
The song?
Yes.
Or okay. Other things.
Okay.
I wanted to
talk. I'm on my way. On my way. You know that song, Rest of Her.
If you're standing next to someone who doesn't know your name, come in, fill up a chair. You and me, we're the same. This is the palace of the thinkers, dreamers, in-betweeners. Broken record players, hearing something in this music. Hear the wind blow softly, carrying a note forever, creating the melody of hope.
What do you want to talk about with this song, Caroline?
I found it like really adorable. And like it kind of felt like I'm forgetting what the word is, but like the team song, you know, for like our church, like this is our deal. Come on in. Let's all do the song.
Totally.
And I think it's so great too. And I like the, at least the kind of presentation she gives for what I assume is her own church, which is just like, we're all very strange. Please come in. We like music. We'll listen to you. And if you feel like you've been really alone, we've all been there, and we'll listen to you talk and like share in that. And I just found that very enjoyable and endearing.
Yeah, and it's also, especially too, knowing she's a student, it's sort of inflected by college freshman door lobby dynamics
totally.
Too, where it's like, we're just hanging out and we're a bunch of dreamers and
just like to talk about ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I also think like this song has, like, lyrically, it's the most accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like the narrative connects a lot.
Oh, and, yeah.
She's very much like telling a story. I mean, she tells stories, I think, in all of her songs, but sometimes you don't know what that is, like what she's trying to say.
Right. Which I guess connects to the theme of the song, which is like, you're welcome here. I'm not going to make it like convoluted for you. Like, this is a song about being in church.
Who could argue with the verse, if you're reaching out to no one and holding in a smile, come in and know your name, friend, I'm listening. This is encouraging.
This is great.
It's very nice.
It made me realize too that I just don't think I have heard very many songs that are like pro church, but in like a fun, approachable way, or even a self-deprecating way, you know, instead of like, we're the army for the kingdom of God. Like, that seems to be most like church, like songs about a church, you know? And so I just found this like very sweet. And like, I think actually a lot of churches try to project this kind of vibe of like, we're all broken here and weird. And like, you're not going to be the first person to ask this question kind of thing. But I just haven't heard a lot of songs about it.
No, I think that's a lovely observation. Yeah. To view church as more just like, I don't know, it'll be a good place to hang out. It's low pressure. We're chill. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, ideally that's what it would be. So often of the time it's not the case. But anything else we want to talk about before we rate the album at hand? Maybe not. All right, well, let's do it. The way this works, Tori, is we give it a holy toast. That's a thumbs up or holy roast. Holy toast. We send this album all the way to heaven, and we say to this album, yeah, 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 yeah. Holy roast, we send it down to hell, and we say,
no, 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 no.
Or we send it to purgatory, a la
the space between.
And we'll start with Caroline, as usual.
I'll give it a holy toast. I like this album. I really enjoyed the lyric writing, and I wish it was a little bit more dynamic, like stylistically, that it like changed a little bit more than it did. But it was a throwback, and I really like Break Hard the Wishbone. I really enjoyed that song, and I think that pushed it hardcore in the toast category for me.
Yeah, very Atlantis on that one too, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's some Atlantis vibes.
There was one that reminded me kind of almost of Fiona Apple, too. Love, that one reminded me of it. I didn't know that was a cover, though.
It was a cover, yeah. Fiona Apple debut. Wait, I think we are recording this on Tidal Day. This is when her first album came out in 1996.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that nice? Happy Fiona Apple Tidal Day to us all. all right, we turn it to Tori.
Oh, definitely going to give this all the way.
Toasty, yes. Toasty.
Toasty, toasty. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that I chose this album to talk about.
Yeah,
it's
so
like,
might.
It holds up.
Yes.
As opposed to so much Christian music, which just does not hold up for me for like personal reasons, right? Like I said, still love Step Up to the Microphone, but like the lyrics make me want to vomit. So
hey man, there's only one way. One God, one body, one faith alone. Caroline, do you think for the stuff we've talked about, especially in the zone of the 90s, that the female artists hold up a little bit better than the male artists?
Oh, that's interesting.
Because think about Sarah Groves, think about Jennifer Knapp, think about Amy Grant, and then compare
Susan Ashton.
Oh, I know a little Susan Ashton, but not a lot.
Oh, I still listen to that album.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Distance? You know what I think?
A Distant Call. Oh, that's what it's called.
Yeah. Distant Call is the name of the album. A topic for next time. What's that, Caroline?
Yeah, I feel like maybe the key there was at least most of these artists we talk about are solo artists versus a lot of the dudes we talked about were in a band.
Mm-hmm. Not Carmen.
And you're in a band besides Carmen.
I'm a one-man band.
A man apart. Maybe you have to like coalesce around a message that all three of you or four of you agree on,
okay,
you know?
Yeah,
whereas like a solo artist gets to be a little bit more creative and specific with what they're trying to say. So yeah. Maybe better music. I don't know.
No, I get that. I want to give this album a huge freaking holy toast. Listening to it today, all the way through for like the third or fourth time in preparation for this episode, I was like, is this one of my favorite albums we've done on the show?
Whoa.
It just gave
high
me
praise.
It gave me a very, very warm feeling, and it did put me into a mindset again of the safety of older friends around me in Texas at like the turn of the 90s, early aughts. Aesthetically and musically, this music's always going to remind me of that time where I just felt very cared for by a lot of different kinds of people, and feel fortunate for that in my life. But also lyrically, and you know, All Fall Down is also like, you can see it's like a VBS song, like "All Fall Down." Like it does feel like a little baby sharky at times, but I like her voice. I like the sense of playfulness with some of the vocal stuff that she's doing on these songs. So yeah, huge, huge, huge. Holy toast! Please don't send us anything that means we have to cancel Sarah Mason. We couldn't take it.
Won't see it. Won't hear it.
If Sarah Mason posts,
I don't think she needs to be canceled. Like,
no, I hope not.
I don't think so. Well, just
I don't get
like
the sense from her.
Like David Dark, her husband is very active on Twitter, mm-hmm. and like, dude is solid.
Okay, great.
They're still together, which you know maybe that'll change next week. I don't know, but.
They listen to this podcast together, and they're like, what are we doing? Let's divorce.
It's been too long. It's been too long. No, but like, because I was very, you know, as a young person, I was like, okay, so who is going to marry this woman? Because it's like, oh. She's so,
I didn't mean it in a mean way, right? But as someone who kind of gets like pegged as I was the unique person, right?
You're a little weird. Yeah.
Right. Like I was very much the weirdo. And so I was like, okay, like I'm very curious to see like who she marries. So yeah. I was like, that was very interesting.
And you said she married David Duke? Is that his name?
David Dark.
Excuse me. I must have missed her.
Oh my gosh.
But we're not the final word on this. Go to @ChristianFunPod. You can give it a roaster. Toast yourself. Get out there and
Pokemon go to the polls.
Ballers.
And look for the new series on Hulu, Rodham, a fantasy series that supposes a world. Caroline, have you heard about this?
No.
There has been a new, I'm so glad to share this news with you. There's been a series that has been greenlit about what if Hillary Rodham had never married Bill Clinton? What would her life have been? And so it is a fictional alternate history television series based on a book.
Oh boy. That's a lot of investment on Hillary Clinton. Okay.
Tori seems amped for it. I don't know why you're not.
You know what I was thinking is I was just sitting here feeling guilty that I haven't like read her book yet. So
there you go.
You're fine.
That's where I was Such like, that. Oh.
Her yeah, Fred Willard tribute book, What Happened? You remember that?
What happened?
What happened? Okay, now it's time to dim the lights, light the candles, and enter into a more worshipful space, Tori. You know how this works. We're not here to plug our projects or to promote ourselves or our social media handles. We're here to lift them up to the Lord.
Because it's all about Jesus. It's
because it's all about him. It's all about JC.
You have to give God the credit.
It's not I who lives, but Christ lives through me.
That's right.
You got to give God all the credit for all the work that I've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every single thing.
At ToriGlass.com.
You take God zero credit for it.
I take zero credit. Or responsibility. I also take zero responsibility. Let's just say that.
I take responsibility. I take zero responsibility.
Yeah, I take zero responsibility.
You know, take it up with God.
Yeah. So, if you have a problem with me, like, yeah. Take
zero.
It up with God.
Zero zilch. And then maybe we lift up something, too, we're enjoying in the culture right now during pandemic. And we'll start with Caroline.
You can take it up with God with me at Caroline Sparks and on anywhere social platform if that's your fancy. A podcast I've lifted up before but I'm still very much enjoying is Stay F Homekins with Paul F. Tompkins and Janie Haddad Tompkins, his wife, and it's just their weekly little podcast, and it's adorable. It's very funny. And it's just a little insight into their marriage, too. I just enjoy it very much. Been comforting in this time.
Great. We'll turn it to Tori now.
I am like, I'm really bad at pop culture, actually, which, you know, I was programmed to be really bad at it. So that kind of makes sense.
Well, you know what? If you don't have any pop culture lift up, you can lift up your own podcast, White Homework.
Oh, yeah. My own podcast is White Homework, but I have been watching What We Do in the Shadows, and that's hilarious. So
yes, that's great. I got a chance to listen to White Homework today. It was so great.
Oh, thank you.
And so I was listening to the one with your sister, I think, and that was just delightful. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Can you give the listener at home, Tori, just a quick synopsis of what White Homework is?
Yeah, so White Homework is a podcast about anti-racism, but I really wanted to create something in a space that felt kind of accessible to people, and anti-racism work is really hard, and like American history is extremely brutal, right, and violent, and so I wanted to be able to have conversations about race and racism and restorative justice that were not I don't want to say super heavy, but like I make space for like joy and humor in them. So that's not for everybody. Some people like to be serious all the time, but I just think that it's easier to digest really hard information when you also are like able to kind of enjoy what you're listening to. I'm not one of those people where it's like hope, like
we should all have hope. Like, I'm not like that. Like, I'm not like fake, like Christianese, like, oh, it's all gonna be okay or it's all gonna work out. Like, I'm very realistic, but at the same time, you know, like, my sister does a lot of the episodes with me and she's a comedian, so we have a lot of fun with it.
Wow, yeah. That's lovely.
Very great.
Yeah,
and people can check that out wherever you get podcasts.
Yep, wherever you get podcasts. You can also go to whitehomework.com, which is my Patreon page, and I like put the episodes up there too.
So. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And at Tori Glass everywhere on social.
At Tori Glass.
Just to lift that up once again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. Damn, I'll lift up that new Margot Price album that came out earlier this year, a couple weeks ago. What a life
Folklore.
She's had. What's that?
Folklore.
Yes. Is that what? No, that's not what it is. Come on. No.
Kevin lifted up Folklore.
No, that's not. No, that's not the new Marco Price album. We're recording this on Folklore Eve. No, the Margot Price album is That's How Rumors Get Started. So it's like a little country inflected rock album. So lovely, very comforting during this time. Good for runs, good for times when you want to get your heart rate up and check in with your heart that way. So highly thumbs up, highly rex. You can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and every review you leave, we donate $1 to a charity, and this month's charity are various Black Lives Matters charities. Tori, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, friend. What a fun time.
You were so great.
What a fun first hang. And there's nothing left to say.
This music is throwing me.
I know. This feels inappropriate that we're talking right now, or like we should be shuffling slowly out of a sanctuary. There's nothing left to say except for, in all of Pod's people said, amen. Tori, what is a Sarah Mason song that you would like us to go out on?
Oh, let's do Downtown.
All right, we're going out on Downtown.
Let's go, girls.
Da 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 da. Ow! Ow! Shania Twain's a Christian. Why not? Yeah.
What?
It's true.
She was in a Christian movie we talked about a few weeks ago for some reason.
Oh my gosh.
Oh. All right, let's go downtown. Okay, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.